So we're here today with Garnell Whitfield. Thanks for coming in to talk with us. A brief bio. He was born in Arkansas, or as we say in Buffalo, Arkansas. He was then moved to Buffalo as a young child and was raised in Buffalo. Went to college, worked for Ford, transferred briefly out of Buffalo, and then came back and joined the Buffalo Fire Department, which he retired from at the commissioner level. So he was the commissioner of the Buffalo Fire Department for several years. And then after that, worked for New York State for the Department of Homeland Security at the state level. Mm-hmm. So what I like to do with this is start with the question, simply, why are you running? And I want that question to be like, not maybe the brain reason why, but in your heart, why are you running for mayor?
Well, I'm running for mayor because this community has been good to me. I've been wonderfully blessed to be supported by this community, to have the honor, privilege of representing this community and working within this community for a number of years. Obviously, 514, it took the life of my mother. This community rallied around my family and I. I owe a debt to this community that I can never repay for what it's provided for my family and myself. I think this community has been long suffering in terms of its needs and that. And I believe God has blessed me with this opportunity, with this platform. And I want to use it to try to make a difference in the lives of the people who have been good to me.
Okay. And what is the one, like, give me one thing that you think that you really, that you bring to the table, let's say you become mayor?
I think there's more than one thing, but experience matters. I've got 40 years of public service in this community. And I think if you ask me what's most important in this moment, I believe trust. I believe this community needs leadership that it can trust. I believe I have the trust of people. I've earned it over the course of my career. And I believe that that's what this community needs. When you look in the eyes of people in this community, you see apathy, you see hopelessness. You see people who have been downtrodden for a long time, people who have an expectation that they might be able to enjoy, life in this community and all the things it has to offer, and have not been able to do that. And so I think that building trust between government, between leadership and this community is the thing that I think is most pressing, most important at this time.
Okay, to that, I think, so part of my background is when I moved to Buffalo, I was a paramedic.
Mm-hmm.
And did that for over a decade in Buffalo in the
90s. Thank you for your service.
Well, thank you as well. And I think, so what I want to touch on with you, with what you've started with, is to me that gives you a perspective of a place, of a city, mm-hmm. a knowledge of a city that is different than what people that
absolutely.
Are in the police or fire or EMS experience. And so I'm curious as to what the experience of the being in the fire department at all these levels brings.
Well, I mean, I think I've been able to meet people where they are. I've been able to see people at their worst and at their best. I believe that being there in a time of crisis in the life of others is an intimate exchange between yourself and them. It's one that breeds trust. It's one that breeds empathy. It's one that allows you to witness the true essence of people, of humanity, of just caring. It's a lot of times, on these calls, there's nothing you can do actually but comfort them silently, even, but just your presence being there matters. And so I think that throughout my career, showing up is something that has always been important to me, and I think it's been important to the people. As commissioner, I went to every second alarm fire, every injury, traumatic injury of a civilian or a firefighter. I tried to be there day or night. And I think that counts for something. And that's not happening anymore. And it's a shame. I think it's a shame. I think that's the least you can do is show up. And I'm trying to show up in this moment again. And so I think this is just an extension of what I've always done. I just think it's important to show up. And not too many people are doing that these days. Yeah.
Do you think it gave you some kind of, as well, an insight into the lives of the citizens?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, absolutely. So you see, you know, from the north side to the east side, the west side, south side, and you see, I think what it does is that though they live in different, under different circumstances, different levels of success or failure or whatever, you know, whether they're homeless people or whether they're well-to-do people, you know, what it shows you is that we have, as human beings, we're all the same. There's some basic needs that we all have in common. And when you see that and when you focus on that, then we, you know, then we're able to have relationship. We're able to appreciate each other in a way that I don't think most people have an opportunity to do. You know, one of the things about being a fireman is the camaraderie of the relationships that you build living with your, you know, your peers. It builds relationship. It builds community. You get to see them in different circumstances. And I think this, you know, being a first responder is no different. You get to see your community. You get to meet them where they are. You get to understand things about them culturally, you know, emotionally, or whatever, that you don't get, you don't get in other circumstances. So I think that gives me a very unique perspective. And I think the other thing that I would say is that what makes me, separates me from the other candidates is, you know, I make people-centered, evidence-based decisions. As a first responder, as an emergency manager, that's what I do. We follow a script, you know. We see things differently than other people. You know, life safety is always first. People are always first. You know, and we make decisions, life and death decisions, in a blink of an eye, but it's based on people and it's based on evidence, and then we move, and we put our lives on the line, we put other people's lives on the line, we take risk, we do these things, we make these decisions, and we move on, but it's not political, it's not emotional, you know, it's not convoluted with all these other concerns about being politically correct or any of those kinds of things. And at times it puts you at odds. I was at odds with the mayor. I was at odds with politicians many times in my career because you have to make choices. You know, the mayor appoints you. There's a loyalty. You know, obviously you work for him, you know, but your first order of business is the lives of the citizens of this community. And then the firefighters, the men and women who you're asking to go into these hostile environments. So these things all have to be balanced. I have done that throughout my career. Nobody else has had that experience. You know, it's different when you're talking about a bill or a policy or something like that, or you're talking about somebody's life, you know? So I think that separates me from them, how I see the world, how I make my decisions, and I think that matters.
Yeah, I can certainly relate to that. I think one of the things, just I'll touch on briefly, and then we can move on, is you know, people have always commented to me that, you know, that must have been a hard job because you never knew what you were going to experience, you never knew what you were going to get into, and I finally realized that wasn't actually the thing, because what you do in these jobs is you prepare so much.
Right.
You're like, so that when you get there and something has happened, like you're not surprised, right? You're going through the things that you already know very right. Clearly and deliberately.
Right. So that's you prepare, you respond, you know, you mitigate whatever you know the issue or whatever, and you go back and you look at it, and you just, it's a constant cycle. It's a constant cycle of reviewing how these, you know, how it went. Debriefing, doing all of those things, and coming up with new plans, new training, you know, modules that will help you prepare for the next one. And you just continue to anticipate, assess. And that's not done in government. Right. You know, I mean, where's our debrief from the 22 snowstorm, from 514, from any of those things? Where are those things? Where are those documents that we use to get better and to build upon? And I'm saying, like, these things matter. And I think that people, if people knew how unprepared we are as a community in terms of public safety, and you hear all these guys talking about public safety, they know nothing of public safety. rubber stamping union contracts and doing whatever the union tells you to do is not being a public safety advocate. I mean, because the union, you know, God bless them, you know, I'm a union member. I understand the importance of them, but their job is to represent their constituents, not the public. And there's this tension, and you need leadership that's able to speak to that and to parse that out.
So if you could pick one thing, imagine it's the day and you're the mayor, what is the one thing that you want to focus on, let's say first, or that is your primary objective, and then how do you plan about
that? As I just said, I make people-centered, evidence-based decisions. I want to focus on the people of Buffalo. I think too many times we talk about the downtown corridor, we talk about the budget deficit, we talk about the 33, we talk about all of these inanimate things, and we never focus on the people. I think the people have to be our priority, and then we make decisions based on that. And so we have to see, you know, where are we at as a community, as people? What are the needs of people in our community, and how do we meet those needs? You know, how do we lift them up? How do we support them in such a way that they can be a part of these processes, right? And then we can build community and we can address these issues. The budget, take the budget. As crazy as this all is, and as actually routine as this is, because this has become routine in Buffalo. But why wouldn't we, as a community, coalesce around a plan rather than having one person say this is the way or one person say that's the way? Nobody knows. That's the truth of the matter. I mean, we should get together as a community, Buffalo Fiscal Authority, whomever in the room, and let's sit down and let's coalesce around a plan, involve the community, and say, this is what we're going to do going forward. Nobody owns that, but we can all agree upon it and work together to make it manifest in our lives, to bring it to fruition. I mean, that's cooperation. I think that's leadership. Open this up, get people at the table, and let's talk about what it is we want to be going forward and how do we get there. And let's put a plan in place, and whoever the mayor is, this is the blueprint. This is what this community has agreed upon. It absolves him, you know, gives him some plausible deniability or her. And it's something that we can support and work together in confidence. And I think that builds trust, that builds community. And that's something I would be very willing to do.
So you're talking about instead of starting with the thing, like let's pick whatever particular thing it is, mm-hmm. a project mm-hmm. that somebody wants to do, is to turn that inside out and start with the people.
Absolutely.
And then kind of reverse engineer the budget is.
At the end of the day, the people are what is important. The people are our priority, not these things. They should be driven by the needs of people. So we need to understand what they are. How can you put a budget in place and you don't even know what the people need or want? It's doomed to fail. I mean, it's going to support the people that you know. And so many of these things are done to support the people that support them. And that's not the people. You know, many of these things are done to lift up systems and policies and people who are part of the problem, quite frankly. And we have to recognize that. You can't just keep running things through the same system, filtering through the same thing, expecting a different result. They're designed to keep those results from happening by design. So we have to re-engineer some of these things. You know, Buffalo doesn't need to be rescued. It needs to be repositioned. It needs to be led. We have everything we need, but it continues to be misused. It continues to be mismanaged. And that's why we find ourselves in the deficit. We always got our hands out. We're the second largest city in New York State. We're an international city on an international border. We have a lot going for us. We have to have leadership that sees that, that accesses those things, that is able to open this thing up and build. We should be a light on a hill. We should be an example for others. Instead, we find ourselves in this constant crisis mode, and it's because of leadership. And those guys are happy. And they're fighting like hell to maintain the status quo. Those same people, they're fighting like hell to maintain the status quo. These same people who are behind these candidates, because we look at the candidates in and of themselves, and as far as I'm concerned, really don't qualify to be the mayor of the city of Buffalo. They have no experience in management. They have no experience in City Hall, really. Even the council members are asking, make it make sense. They don't understand what drives overtime. We want to talk about it all the time as if it's some nefarious thing, but they don't even understand overtime or any of those things because they haven't had to manage any of that. And that's just the truth of the matter. They're ignorant about the inner workings of the city of Buffalo because that's not been their job. And now you have an interim mayor who has, you know, been handed this job. And so he's got some insight now that he never had before, but he still has no experience. And it's the people behind them that are driving them. It's the people behind them that are trying to maintain the status quo because they have benefited generationally from the mess we see right now. They've done very well, and they want to continue to do that.
Yeah, there's one of the things I've always, that you kind of touched on with this is that I've felt about Buffalo is when you do travel outside of Buffalo, you recognize other cities, let's say particularly, you know, sort of newer American cities in the South or whatever, that are doing financially better than a city like Buffalo. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got more businesses coming in, their populations are growing and all these kind of things. But the interesting thing is they're all trying to build the infrastructure that we have. They're trying to build the cultural institutions. You know, we've got the Albright Knox here, we've got a symphony, we've got all these things that other places, you know, have had to build, let's say within the last decade.
Right.
But we have them all. But one of the things I've felt about Buffalo to that point is that we constantly reminisce about the Buffalo that we never knew, the glorious city that Buffalo was at the turn of the 20th century, late 19th century, when it was booming and it was there was promise here, there was opportunity here. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing about Buffalo at that time that I see is that the things that they were doing were actually quite innovative.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that it's that what you were saying, this people wanted to keep things the way they are.
Absolutely.
Right. Yes. So yes. It's not looking forward. It's not innovating and saying, how can we be a better city? It's saying we want it just the way it is.
People got their piece of the pie.
Yeah.
And didn't want anybody else to have any. And so they made bonehead decisions. You know, they tore up the parkway, right? They drove UB out to Amherst. You know, they put they wouldn't let the convention center be on the waterfront. The stadium moved, and I just heard yesterday they got this big development plan in Orchard Park around the stadium. All of these economic development zones and all that nonsense. Do you know how hard these people worked to destroy this city? You just talked about the promise. You just talked about how it was booming. Do you know how hard these people work to maintain the status quo? These are the same people. They're still in charge here. They're still behind the scenes driving all of this, and they're still doing very well. And they don't give a damn about the rest of this community. And that's just the truth of the matter. They don't. They don't. And you can say you love Buffalo and all of this Buffalo backer stuff. Look at the decisions that they've made. Look at what they've done. UB was supposed to be downtown Buffalo. That was every study that came back downtown. It was transformational. But they were afraid they would lose control. So they moved them to Amherst. They let the stadium go. What if that stadium was sitting over on Best and Jefferson? What would that community look like? Or if it was on the waterfront where every other stadium in America is almost. How would that affect us? You know, all of these things. And here we are now with the 33 having an argument about the 33. It's so ridiculous. We have what is universally accepted as the best designed city in America, maybe the world. In terms of its parkway system and that, they tore it up so they could conveniently come in and out of the city and not deal with the residents therein. You know, it was a matter of convenience for them. avoidance destroyed this community. They did it all over America, but America didn't have that parkway, you know. The intentionality, there's an intentionality behind where we are in this community now. We have to be just as intentional about moving forward. And this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to do that. I don't claim to have all the answers. I don't need to have all the answers. There are people working every day throughout the city who are working hard and making a difference in the lives of others who, if given an opportunity, would help transform this city and make it the city that it potentially could be. And they need to have voice. They need to have opportunity. And that's what this is about for me.
You touched on it, and so this was something, you know, everybody wants an answer to this, so I'm giving everybody an opportunity to discuss this. So the 33, what is your idea about what should be done?
I mean, here's my idea about the 33, first of all. Here are the facts. We know that in America, highways were driven through communities of color across this nation intentionally. Destroying those communities for whatever reason, that was done. We know that to be a fact. If in fact we know that about the 33 when it was done 50 years ago, however long it was, if we know that it was done for the wrong reason then, what makes it right today? What makes it right today? It's destroyed that community. It's destroyed the lives of people. People have died. From the ingestion of absorption of the toxins from that pollution, people that have lost their generational wealth. All of these things have happened. How can we sit here today and have a discussion about and let's not forget about the parkway, you know, one of the most beautiful things ever created. How can we sit here today and talk about a tunnel? And here's the thing, what people don't talk about. You know why there's two sides on this coin? Because when Stephanie Barber, God bless her soul and thank her for her service, and this is not anything against her, quite the contrary, she never even considered a tunnel. She was told that the only way it gets done is with the tunnel. And she said, okay. And they said, okay. They accepted it. Because they were told there was no wiggle room. It was this or that or nothing. So they took that, which is I understand them doing that. But that's a false choice. That's a false choice. When you have leadership, when you have consensus in this community, we have power. They didn't have it then. We can have it now. And we ought to stand up. And Buffalo needs leadership that is willing to speak truth to power. And go out on them and risk your political career, whatever it is, for the people that you call yourself leading, you should be willing to put those on the line. That's leadership. You should not be able to play it safe and parse around and keep your foot on both sides of the fence trying to play footsie with this thing. This is a generational issue. It is an important issue. It is one that we have to get right. And anybody that's telling you they want to wait on a study. So where were you at when you found out the study wasn't done? You went out here crying foul. You would have let it go through. So this is all nonsense, playing political games about, oh, we're going to wait and see what a study. We don't want to, there's no consensus on it. There's no consensus on it because there's no leadership on it. That's all it is. This is a no-brainer. It's ridiculous. Why do we need the tunnel? And here's the thing about the 33. I believe in God. Everything we see is made up of something we cannot see. You know, you see water, you don't see the hydrogen, you don't see the oxygen, you see the water. But we know that it's made up of something else. So is the 33. When they put the 33 in, not only did it destroy that community, but all the other arterials that come in and out of Buffalo that people used to transverse, people used to use, died a slow death. When they stopped being used, communities died, businesses died. And that's the truth of the matter. We can reinvigorate those by filling in the 33 and spreading that money across the city. That's transformational, and I don't know who would argue against that for a tunnel.
Yeah, you touch on this with talking about dealing with all the arteries that got destroyed by putting the 33 in. One of the things I've seen in the time that I've lived here and has always been frustrating to me is that, you know, I remember the arguments about the Peace Bridge and mm-hmm. then the competition that Cuomo did for the Skyway. And then we've been talking about the 198 for at least the last 10 years. And now we're talking about the 33. And of course, none of these things happen. And to me, they're all one and the same thing.
Like
if you're talking about transportation, we need to be talking about 33 and the 198 and the 190 and why you're stuck at traffic lights at 11 o'clock at night on Main Street right. when there's no cars inside. Like all right. of these things need to be dealt with.
Yeah.
So how do you do that?
I mean, this is not rocket science. You know, there are cities all over the world who have these same issues and have successfully dealt with them. I mean, why are we sitting here like this is the moon or something and there's no answer to any of these things? There's answers to these things. We need leadership that is willing to open their eyes and look outside. The reason they don't want to look outside, because it would displace them. Because they shouldn't have been in leadership in the first place. And that's the truth of the matter. And if you're not willing to put these things on the line, if you're not willing to grow beyond your circumstances and you want to be comfortable and safe, then this is what you end up with. This is the kind of leadership we have. There should be national searches for commissioners and stuff like that. What are we doing? I mean, what are we doing here? And it's nothing against the men and women that work in the Buffalo Fire and police departments and these other places. But what the heck are we doing? I went through a national search. Mayor Masiello did a national search for the fire department and for the police department. We got Gil Kuralkowski, who went on to work for the president, for crying out loud. We got a good person. We can do better. And that's not to discount the people we have here. We have people of national significance in that right in our midst, but they don't get a shot because everything's politicized. You know, how can you say this is the best commissioner ever and 2 days later fire him? Going in a different direction. It's all politics, man. They make decisions based on political nonsense. And that is our problem in Buffalo. Any one of these guys you elect is going to do the same thing because that's where they come from. That's what they know. That's all they know is politics.
And the other thing I want to get into briefly is the fiscal state of the city. And you've brought this up, but it seems that, you know, I've been in Buffalo for a few decades now, and that's been the conversation for every waking minute that I've been here. And certainly there's some things happening now with regard to this, the parking garage transfer, things like this. So how do you feel that we should both, you know, short-term and long-term start dealing with the fiscal state of the city?
Well, short-term, tell the truth. Short-term, have an audit, first of all. You know, that has not been done. You know, we got to open this thing up because that builds trust. We need the people, residents of this community, to support this, whoever the mayor is, to get behind this, to be a part of this. And you can't do that. How can you, I mean, how do you fix something? You know, you were a paramedic. When you went on a call, you did an assessment, right? You didn't just go start willy-nilly saying, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get this guy a shot or something, right? No, you did an assessment. That has not been done. So how can we have a budget proposal based on nonsense, based on half-truths, based on politics, you know? And then you got these two, what do I call them? The two major candidates or whatever with all the endorsements and all the money. I'm right, you're wrong, you're right, I'm wrong. I mean, that's just so nonsensical. It's so childish. And I mean, it's just ridiculous. Neither of them have a clue. Neither of them know. And instead of just saying that, I mean, I think the people would have an appreciation for you saying, I really don't know, but let's work together. Let's find out what's going on here. Let's find out why we're in a deficit. And when were we, when is it that we were not in a deficit? When we had a control board. We ended up with a surplus, which they still squandered. What does that tell you? There should be oversight. There has to be fiscal oversight. Third party, community-based fiscal oversight of the budget, of City Hall. And what's wrong with that? I worked under a higher control board very successfully. Again, you have, not only do you, they're able to get things done that as a politician or as a commissioner, you cannot, because they're business people. They're unaffected, but they're not political. So they're able to get things done. As long as those things are worth getting done, you can go and advocate and they will support that. There's nothing wrong with that, getting permission to move forward. I don't have a problem with that. I'm not so stuck on my power and myself and I wanted to be absolute and I want to make all the decisions. And not only that, it gives you plausible deniability too on the other side of it, you know, which is not talked about. But that's very comforting to be able to say, no, this was our plan. It wasn't mine, you know. I don't want to take responsibility for what went wrong and I don't want to take responsibility for what went right. We do this together. You know, it's just a no-brainer to me. And it's the insecurity of political people and their agendas, behind-the-scene agendas that they don't want to give up. And that's what this is about. They're protecting their power and their influence at all costs, at the cost of this community.
And I get, lastly, what I'm interested in is there another city or place or even say a leader? And I'm particularly interested in like at the municipal level or more local levels that has done something particularly interesting that that you sort of you look up to.
Well, you know what? And, you know, I don't want to disparage anybody, whether I agree with their style of leadership, whether I think they were overall a good mayor. I'll just keep it right here locally. I've been here my whole life. I think every one of our mayors have attributes, areas that they were strong in, and they had weaknesses, you know, and that's just the truth of it. If you, even going back to Jimmy Griffin, who I'm not a fan of. But he had attributes, you know, he was strong in certain ways. I appreciate that. I had the opportunity to work under Mayor Masiello. He gave me my first shot in terms of executive, in terms of, you know, an appointment as a deputy commissioner. I worked under him. I appreciated that. I he left after he appointed me, so I didn't get a chance to stay long under him. But I was a chief fire administrator, but I was still civil service. Under him for a while. But I appreciated his leadership. He was strong in areas. Mayor Brown, I had the opportunity to work under him for 10 years or whatever, you know. He had attributes. He was strong in certain ways, you know what I'm saying? But in certain ways, he wasn't. And so as human beings, we all have our faults. We all have our shortcomings. I have mine, you know. We all have our strengths and our weaknesses, but let's not pretend like we don't. Let's not pretend like we're infallible. Let's not pretend like we're the answer, you know, to everything. I know that I'm not. And that's why you need people around you who are strong in these areas and who can advise you or whatever. You know what I'm saying? And who can bring a different perspective to the table. I think that... you know, without picking out any particular things, I mean, Mayor Brown was a people person. You know, he was very good at what he did. He was a very good politician. Very good. I mean, 5 terms. He was a good politician, okay? Mayor Masiello was very smart. I thought he was very smart. He was a strong leader, I thought, you know? I appreciated him. He would undress you behind the scenes. I mean, he would go up one side of you and down the other side of you. But when you came out of that door, we were a team. Never did it publicly. Never did. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I appreciated that. I'm not saying he did it to me, but I've seen it. You know, I've seen it. In the office, he was tough. You know, he wanted answers. He demanded a certain, excellence or whatever. And if you didn't give it to him, he let you know that. But when we came out the doors, publicly, you were his guy. You know, I appreciated that. They had I think, I've been able to work under them and learn from them locally. And I've traveled the country. So, I've been around the country since 514, working in other communities with other executives around the country, all of the places where, these tragedies have befallen these communities. I've been there with the people. I've been there with their leadership. And it's one of the reasons why I am running for mayor, because I've seen how leaders around this country have responded to trauma and responded to these incidences. And we're woefully lacking in Buffalo. Woefully lacking, because leadership brings people together. And so what you understand in the first response community is that every tragedy, every trauma presents an equal but opposite opportunity. 9/11 opened up the windows, the floodgates of equipment and support for the first response community, right? It was a short window. They closed it quickly. But in that moment, we were able to take great strides. 514 is no different. We have an incident of international significance, happens in our community, tragedy, but we had this opportunity now to lead. We didn't do it.
Well, Garnell, thank you for coming on, and we look forward to continuing these conversations.
Thank you.
Thank you.